nationwide. We bring you latest current issues, discussions and information. Nationwide on Radio Miraya.
Hello and welcome to the discussion hour on Nationwide program on Radio Miraya with me, Gabriel Shadal. And today we will be looking at the South Sudan Peace Agreement roadmap, and that is in the context of making a permanent constitution and the prospects for the electoral process. And on the 4th of August 2022, the parties to the revitalized agreement on the resolution of conflict in South Sudan announced the extension of the interim period for another 2 years, beginning from the end of the 36 months of the agreement. This comes amid concerns that many of the required arrangements to pave the way for national elections are not in place. These include the constitution review process, security arrangements, election law, among others. Today I will be talking about the issues with three civil society activists to help us understand the implications of the extension of the interim period for the constitution making process and the election process in South Sudan. Let me welcome Christine Kide, the National Coordinator for South Sudan Youth Organizations Coalition. Welcome.
Thank you, Shadow.
And welcome Jacqueline Nasiwa, Director for the Center for Inclusive Governance. Welcome, Jacqueline.
Thank you.
And welcome David Ayuel, Youth Representative in the National Constitution Amendment Committee. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
Yes, first, there have been conflicting reactions concerning the extension itself, that is of the interim period, but it has become a fact as long as the parties have agreed. But from your point of views, what opportunities can come with the extension? Any of you can start.
Okay, thank you.
Welcome.
Let me start. The roadmap is not a bad idea, but how the roadmap came about is what we have issues with. The peace agreement gives an opportunity for the signatories to the agreement to amend or to amend the agreement and come up with a plan on how they can finalize the implementation of the agreement. So this is what we thought could be in the name of the roadmap that the government came up with. When you see how this whole thing of the roadmap came about, it started like a rumor that there is going to be a roadmap, and when the government came out and talked about it, they said it's still a secret document, it's not yet meant for the public. And then boom, we had there was a consultation done for a few signatures to the agreement. And in all this period we get to know that other parties were not engaged in the process of developing this roadmap. It was basically the IG that was involved. So the IG went and tabled it to the other parties in the Artigonu, leaving out the other stakeholders group that are signatories to the agreement. So that is not the idea of the peace agreement. The peace agreement was for us to sit as the signatories to the agreement and come up with a way forward on the implementation of the agreement. So that didn't happen. So people had different views on this roadmap. And when the roadmap was made public, a few people, like I think two or three from the civil society, were invited to see the document, not even to read it and go through into the details and come up with their opinions. So they were not given that time. So finally, the document was again tabled in Freedom Hall, and it was approved by the cabinet and then goes to parliament, and the parliament approves. But when you look at the document itself, it contradicts with the this permanent constitution making law that has been passed recently, and it also contradicts the peace agreement. When you look at the part 6 of the roadmap, it's completely mixed up. We see the roadmap taking responsibilities from a commission that is supposed to be a government entity and giving it to an independent body that is supposed to be established with technical support to the permanent constitution making process, and that is the CDC, the Constitutional Drafting Committee. The Constitutional Drafting Committee is specifically to be established to draft the constitutional text. They don't have decision-making powers. The institution that the government should reconstitute and work with through this process of the constitution-making is the Reconstituted National Constitution Review Commission. That is the government entity that is going to be held accountable on the processes of the permanent constitution-making process. So we see a lot of conflicting provisions in the roadmap that we feel is not right to pass it like that. We feel it needs to be reviewed so that we move together without contradicting ourselves.
But as I said at the beginning, it has become a reality that people have to live with and continue maybe amending things as they go. Let me get your view, David Ayuel.
Thank you very much. Christine Kidian highlight a lot of things about roadmap. And with time, we will look into that in details. The opportunity that comes with roadmap, I don't see any big opportunity that come with a roadmap, except for the political parties to extend their time. It gives them an opportunity to live more in the government, more than what the revitalized peace agreement has said. Because why? What beat my understanding is that since the signing of the peace agreement 2018, you can imagine there was a long time for all those activities to be implemented. But now somebody is asking us that give us another time of 24 months. Within 24 months, we will be able to implement what we were not able to implement in 5 years, you see. So it gives them the opportunity to extend their stay in power. That is on the side of political actors. On our side, as members of the civil society that stand with the people, the only opportunity we have with the roadmap is to get back on the drawing board. It gives us the opportunity to sit again on the drawing board and give pressure to the peace, to the political actors to implement the peace agreement. But again, like I said earlier on, 24 months compared to 5 years, you could see what is the length, the longest period in which all these activities could be implemented. So we don't see any opportunity, especially as an individual. I don't see any opportunity. But again, the roadmap is not a bad idea. Like what my fellow friend, my Christian Kidden said, it's not a bad idea. But even the instant at which it was peddled brought in a lot of disagreement. Because if the wide majority of civil society actors were considered as part and parcel of the peace process and implementation of the peace process brought together on the table, and our people in the government were able to convince us and said, look, we have had a long time, but we are unable to implement the provisions of the agreement. We are asking for extension. What is your opinion? Considering that civil society is a stakeholder in the peace agreement, if that was done, well and good. But our colleagues that were there, the members that you had, we're not even given enough time to review and understand the provisions, each article, and in relation to the implementation metric of the revitalized peace agreement 2018, they were able to analyze and see the gaps at which this could be implemented. They did not get that time because it was drafted and brought to their attention, and that's it. So we are not against the issue of extending or having the revitalized peace agreement. But the issue is what logic, what modality, what mechanisms are there in the roadmap that can convince the people of South Sudan that these political actors have committed this time to implement the peace agreement and end and put to an end the longest suffering of the people of South Sudan.
Thank you, David. Thank you, Christine, for that. Let me go to Jacqueline Nasiwa, Director for the Center for Inclusive Governance. What's your view?
Okay. Thank you, Gabriel. And thank you to Miraya listeners out there. I would say that the roadmap, as my colleague said, is not a bad idea, because at the end of the day, we have to implement the peace agreement. But I could say that instead of saying we have, we need to look at opportunities, I'll say we missed opportunity. And the opportunity we missed in this roadmap is to include the people in the implementation of the peace agreement. And I think the parties to the agreement have several times said the peace agreement is difficult to implement. And there are certain provisions which also face challenge in terms of the implementation. So the roadmap could have been an opportunity for us to unpack the peace agreement. Where is the challenge in the implementation of the peace agreement? Where are the loopholes that make the agreement to look like it's not realistic? And where can citizens rally to make this agreement achievable, legitimate, and also realistic in terms of its implementation? Mm-hmm. And I think we were hoping that this roadmap will be more inclusive so that citizens can also be involved in defining even the end of the transitional period, which is the key aspect of the roadmap here, like mm-hmm. ending our access through transitional democratic elections. So people have to be involved in discussing the roadmap towards the elections and towards ending this transition. And this is where I say this roadmap has missed that opportunity. However, there could be some opportunities that we can create. And as civil society, we miss to be involved, but we have to create opportunities that we think we can be able to involve in the continuation of the implementation of the peace agreement through the extended period. And one of it is for us to look at trust building. The current scenario is that there's no trust building among the parties even, and with the communities. We have seen the impact being people even delinking themselves from the peace agreement at the grassroots. They don't care of how the peace agreement is being implemented. Yet there are very key things in the peace agreement that impact on the lives of the people. So we can use this opportunity to start building trust mm-hmm. between the people and the government and the parties so that we can be able to move forward.
Yeah.
The other opportunity will be for us to look at how do we stabilize South Sudan. Currently, we have communal violences. We have also inter-party violences. We have insecurities. So this could be an opportunity for us to say, okay, we have reached this roadmap of the peace agreement and we have extended it, but we are still in crisis. How do we stabilize our country? Mm-hmm. And I think this is something that we need to take seriously. And then we pave way now for strengthening our institutions, which will include the institutions of the rule of law and justice, and also strengthening the constitution-making process and the electoral processes.
Thank you. Thank you, Jacqueline Nasiwa. And listeners, Radio Mirai, this is me, Gabriel Shadara. I'm in the studio with three civil society activists, Christine Kiden, National Coordinator for South Sudan Youth Organizations Coalition, Jacqueline Nasiwa, Director of the Center for Inclusive Governance, and David Ayuel, Youth Representative in the National Constitution Amendment Committee. And we are discussing the South Sudan Peace Agreement Roadmap, making permanent constitution and prospects for the electoral process. Now, I come to the center issue of our discussion today is linking the roadmap to the constitution-making process. And it seems the constitution-making process has ever been controversial in the history of the Sudan and also in the history of South Sudan later. So what are your thoughts about this process when we have this roadmap that is extending and giving life 2 years to the peace agreement? Let me start again with Christine Nakiden.
Thank you, Shadar. In the peace agreement, it's very clear on how the permanent constitution-making process should happen. And the government started well before the whole idea of the roadmap. And when I mean well is that they started the process from the grass, from the scratch. But they started it very late. The permanent constitution-making process, according to the peace agreement, is supposed to run for 24 months. And now we have a roadmap that is 24 months, and in that same period we have to have a permanent concession making process, and the permanent constitutional process is being tied to elections. In other words, in these 24 months of the roadmap, we are supposed to finish the permanent constitution making process, amend the National Election Act, and organize for elections. Mm-hmm. So I am trying to think, like, how are we going to do this permanent constitution making process in this same limited time, and at the same time amend the National Election Act, then organize elections? To me, this time frame of the roadmap is not realistic, because we see even the tasks they were supposed to do from this year, establishing commissions like the RNCRC, the CDC, was supposed to be by around from the 1st of August to 30th of October, and now we are in November. So a lot of things were supposed to have happened from August to October, but nothing happened. It is just of recent that the Parliament passed the bill, and it was sent to the President to send his signature, and we've not heard anything about that. But we know very well, according to the law, that if that bill passes a number of days without the President sending his signature, it will automatically become law. So we are waiting for that. So these time frames are not realistic, and if at all the Artigono was serious and committed to implementing this roadmap the way they mentioned or talked about it, by now we should have seen progress.
Yeah, so you are saying the roadmap should have been accompanied by quick action, swift action.
Exactly.
And even running against time or ahead of time to
exactly.
achieve things in a very short time that was imagined, right?
The energy they came with, mm-hmm. with this roadmap, yeah. was supposed to be the same energy
reflected
they're supposed
in the implementation.
In the implementation.
And now we are behind time.
Exactly, we already were behind time.
Let me
time.
Go quickly to David Ayuel on this point, the same point, yes.
Thank you very much. Just like what Christine said, the implementation matrix in the peace agreement clearly states that the reconstitution of the permanent constitution process and the committee begins within that period and lasts for 24 months. We have seen that it is slowed down since from that time, and even the roadmap itself, it's not clearly giving you indications of how it's supposed to move. Because if you look into the Annex 8 of the roadmap, and it is telling us that the implementation mechanism or the manner in which the roadmap is to take upon the reconstitution of the committee that is to work on the constitution, and it is telling us that it started way in June. Okay, which we could say it has gone to that extent. Mm. And you would see it is going to end by 30th of August 2024. Now you ask yourself, if that constitution is going to take that long. It is initially taking the period in which the roadmap is extended. Mm. Now you talk about the elections. How are they going to come in? Because in that constitution, the amendments of the legislations need to be reflected, and they need to conform with the constitution for the election to take place. So that brings us back to the drawing board to say that the roadmap does not clearly provide
how
the process is to begin and even to end. Mm. For example, recently we all know that the parliament adopted the bill, but there is no any movement further from that time. There is no the committee has not been reconstituted. It seems to be static for now, unless if there is any progress that is in the pipeline,
which might be subject also to another
exactly.
round of negotiation.
True.
And haggling who should be there and how.
And maybe to end that before my colleagues picked it up, the most implemented provision in the agreement could be maybe some of chapter one. The appointment, taking up a position, so-and-so is becoming minister, parliament, they were very fast in doing that. That is what we know. But in other things like establishing a better democratic process of the new movement of going forward of the country and to put an end to the suffering of the people, that has not been reflected in the roadmap. Thank you.
Well, welcome, Jacqueline.
In terms of the roadmap and the constitution making process, I think what we need to ask ourselves, who are the stakeholders in this constitution making process, and how do people come to be involved in the constitution making process? The different stages of the constitution making process all require some time for preparations and also for implementation and for their final reporting. So when you look at the first step, we are still in the process of the law. We just passed the law. And after the law, we are to reconstitute now the National Constitutional Review Commission. And that means they have to start working on operationalization. They have to start putting up their rules and procedures. And what is very key is the public consultations, getting the citizens' views to this constitution-making process. Because the constitution is to be reflective of the citizens' views, the text of the constitution. And that means there's going to be nationwide civic education and public consultation. The diaspora need to be consulted. The refugees and the IDPs need to have their voice included in this process. And that means probably you can say the whole year will go into this first stage. And then now you start preparing for the National Constitutional Conference, which also will come out with delegates where people will nominate their delegates to this process, and they'll have to have deliberations. And this time frame need to be clearly defined. Like from this time, the roadmap will be taking up these steps. And from this time, we'll be moving on to the National Constitutional Conference, and these are the stages that we reach into. And our experience has shown that without clear time frame, we are likely just to float and to fly around. And then at the end of the day, we'll not achieve and we'll go back and ask for another extension. So the constitution making process is one critical aspect, and as it Kide say, it defines even how the elections are going to be conducted. And that means that the constitution become the cornerstone of our exit of the transitional period, and more focus should be put on it. We have the issue of finances, which is constraining, and the public consultation and the rest need a lot of finances. And I always say that our national processes should be citizen-driven and government-driven. That means government has to allocate funding for these processes to be successful. We always feel overburdened when we depend on donors from every cent of what we want to implement, and when their hands are not extended and then every process stalled. So for this process, I was one of those who said for this roadmap to succeed, we need to have resources allocated first. And these resources should be, say, like, this is the amount that goes for this process, and this money is available so that these processes will move forward.
Yeah, Jacqueline, let me ask a quick question also. When a constitution is amended, I want to see how a constitution can be amended when the amendment of this constitution will imply changing many laws that come from that constitution, including maybe the election law itself, and then you run quickly to the election process. Can you explain this?
I think here we need to separate between amending a constitution and developing a constitution. In this process, we are developing a permanent constitution, which is different from maybe amending one article, amending two articles. This is coming out with what we call the permanent constitution for the country. And that permanent constitution can be subject to amendment. You can say, okay, this article here, we are not agreeing with it, we need to amend, and you propose an amendment. But here we are looking at a whole lot of a document that we want to make it concrete, and then it becomes our binding document.
But why is this? Is this constitution that now we have, is something we should throw away completely and we start from the scratch, or what does it mean?
The current constitutions are temporary constitutions. They are not constitutions that we call the constitution of the Republic of South Sudan. They are either interim or transition for a specific period to serve a specific time frame. And when we look at the transitional constitution, it came from the time we got our independence, 2011. And that constitution was designed to take us through as a country when we got our independence as a sovereign nation. Now, after we got our sovereign nation, this time-bound constitution will have to be amended so that we can develop now a permanent constitution that if we have transitions or no transitions, that constitution become our constitution of the republic. And it is not subject for anyone to just overthrow it or to wake up in one night and amend it. It becomes our document that we all bound with it and we uphold it.
Let me hear the views of David in this, because you are in that committee. Me myself, I don't see how people can start from a scratch and say we are making a new constitution, permanent constitution, without building on anything, without history, without records and all that?
That's a very good question, and I want to agree with her that the constitution cannot just be thrown away. When you're working on a constitution, you look into the history of the people, you look into the history of the laws that existed before. Previously, we had the interim constitution 2005, which was a constitution that is to take us through that particular time. Then later it was moved on into a transitional constitution of the Republic of South Sudan 2011. So if you understand the word transitional, it is not a permanent constitution. And it being a permanent constitution does not mean it cannot be amended. So it is a transitional constitution. We are not throwing it away in this process, but there is a need to have now a permanent constitution that will be called the Constitution of the Republic of South Sudan, where all the rights of the people shall enshrined in that very constitution. Now, moving away a little bit, if we understand the process of constitution making process, it's a very and very long one. It involves international kind of guidelines. For example, there is a preparatory space where people prepare, and that is the space, that is the time we are in now. There is the public awareness space where people deliberate on what needs to be done, and this goes deep to grassroots level, like what she was saying. This is a work that is now done by the committee, if it is given the powers, so that the people in the grassroots level, someone who is very far in Mombolo, someone that is in Wurol, can be able to understand that there is a new law that is going to govern me, and there, this is what the law says. Okay, then we also have the other phase as the deliberation of the content, where people now, it is very intense. People speak and say, we don't want this to be part of our laws governing us. We want this, until people have a consensus. Then we have the final phase where it is put into the content. That is the technical team now does that. And then given to the parliament.
Which will take another time.
Given to the parliament to rectify it, and then maybe passed it, and then given to the president. That alone is a vast process. It's very long. It cannot just be done within 1 year, within some few
also,
months.
Also, for the sake of argument, every nation in this world, or whatever you say, they have their big issues.
Correct.
You go to the UK now, they have their big issues. They have to say, okay, we want these issues to be addressed. You go to the United States, every time there is a big issue in the Constitution, and they are making amendments as they go. So what are the big issues when it comes here for South Sudan Constitution Amendment? Let us say there is no argument about what we should have about rule of law, for example, or balance of powers whatsoever, or separation of powers, right? But what are the big issues that are likely to come up? Let me start with Christine.
Okay, thank you. I feel the biggest issue, why we feel it's very important we have a constitution making process, we want to define our governance system. When you look at our system of government, it's not clear. A part where you'll hear people talk about federalism, part where people talk about decentralized system of government, part where people talking about presidential. We don't have a clear definition of our governance system. That is something that the constitution should define. And the transitional constitution does not define that. We also have an issue of rule of law, as mentioned, and also now the transitional constitution is being incorporated with the peace agreement, and this peace agreement is not the will of the people. So this is an agreement that the leaders agreed to, and they have now imposed it on our legal document, and we have to abide by it. So this is not a document that we can run with this country for a very long time. What I want to agree is that we will not throw away all our history in the transitional constitution. Mm-hmm. We will pick what favors us and leave what does not favor us. Mm-hmm. And when you look into our transitional constitution, there are clauses. Is it the 102?
Yeah.
The president's 101. That has been the major issue of our leadership system.
Yeah. They talk about how much power you can give to an individual.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
So that has been the major issue where our leaders keep on conflicting all the time.
Yeah. For the sake of time, let me pick also from Jacqueline. What are the big issues that are likely to come, if you add to what Christine is saying?
The big issues, I think, that probably will come in the constitution-making process is defining the system and the structures of government. One thing we need to know is that when we are talking about the system and structures of government, our current peace agreement and also our constitution is based on the system of federalism.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is one of the key discussions that we need to start involving people on. Right now, there are miscommunications or misunderstanding or misinterpretation of the word federalism because of our bitter history of implementation of federalism, where some people call it, maybe it means kokora, like you go to your own region or to your home state. This require more discussions and more enlightenment so that people will know exactly what federalism is. The other discussions we need to have is, I always say, we have boundaries, international boundaries on paper, but we don't have actual borders in practice. Our borders are disputed, and when you look at our neighboring countries, they still have issues of clear boundary demarcations with us, where some of our land is scooped to other countries and all this. So the constitution-making process gives us that leverage to start defining our own international boundaries. We also have the question of, who are we? And I think this is one of the questions we always ask ourselves. And I think defining ourselves as a people is very, very important. And regardless of our tribes, we need to have a common theme that unify us. And also the issue of language. I think our constitution currently say every local language is a national language. And we ended up adopting English as our official language, which is okay for serving us. But we don't have the local language that we can use. We had Arabic by then, and now we don't have a common language that unifies us. And that requires us to take action on what we want to be and how we want to connect with each other. And the other key area for us is also in terms of the Bill of Rights. And I think that is very, very important. And for us, women and children, I think we have an interest in the Bill of Rights, because that's where we can guarantee our rights in that discussions. In terms of other probably overriding big issues to the constitution-making process is in terms of its adoption. The current process of the adoption is that our parliament will be turned into a constituent assembly. And then once they are turned into constituent assembly, they deliberate and adopt the constitution. And I think this is where most of the discussions and challenges and questions within the political parties came up, in the adoption of this current act. And experience has shown that even in some countries, they may probably refuse to adopt the constitution. And what can be done to safeguard if, for example, Parliament is not able to pass the final text? And how do we also safeguard that what goes into this constitution is reflective of our views? And I think this becomes very important. I had the privilege recently as a technical committee member to visit the Gambia. They have refused to pass their constitution, and it is returned back to the executive. That means they are at loggerhead now.
Mm-hmm.
So if such scenario comes forward, what do we do?
Yeah, that is a million dollar question that nobody has an answer to it now.
Yeah.
Yeah, let me get the views from David. I think we'll be coming back again to this process. Yes, David.
One of the biggest things that people will talk about in the constitution making process is the issues of cultures and customs. These are something that we have to reflect on as South Sudanese. And what do I mean by that? My culture is different from Christine Kiden's culture. And if you look into the constitution, there is no clear definition of what law is absolute than any other law. Some other constitutions will tell you that this is the supreme law of the land and shall bind on each and everyone in the country. And any other law that contravenes the provision of the constitution shall be treated as null and void. What does that mean? It means if my culture overrides any provision of the constitution, that culture of mine, that law that I am practicing in my culture, cannot move forward. I'm not saying we should do away with our cultures. They are very important. Cultural heritage, it is our identity. But again, if any law that is passed on and it contradicts the provisions of the supreme law, this should be defined. Tell me however much that culture of yours is very important. As long as it is violating the provision of the constitution, it will not go anywhere. These are the issues that are now.
And it seems that we are following a parallel system on that.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. Now in our current constitution, well, the custom is part of the constitution.
Yeah.
But if you look even into cases of murder, for example, if you look into section 206 of the Penal Code Act of South Sudan, if you kill somebody, there is an opportunity for any member of the deceased, if they wish for blood compensation.
Yeah.
That has been given. It is coming from the culture.
Mm.
And this is a serious offense, meaning if I have a lot of money and everything, I can kill as many as and influence the families of deceased, and tomorrow I walked out.
These
are the things that will come.
Yeah.
Other issues will be requirements for one to run for an office, like what Jacqueline said in regards to determining what kind of system are we going to use for government. So even when you're running for elections, for example, Article 98 of the Transitional Constitution of the Republic of South Sudan gives you the requirement for one to run as president. And one of those requirements, and it contradicts the rights of the youth, because it says for you to run as president, you must be of 40, at least 40 of years. And then again, the constitution is telling us that youth have right, and all levels of government have to give young people opportunities for participation.
Mm.
How are you telling me that the youth is going to run if he's capable?
Mm.
These are the things that we raise in the constitution.
Yeah, and even what is the definition of young age?
Exactly.
And marriageable age.
And marriageable age.
Exactly.
So thank you for these big, big issues that are coming in. And how are all these things going to loom large on the election, Christine?
How are they going to loom large on the elections? You see, if we had an opportunity to start the civic education now and public consultation, maybe we could be ready by the time we start the constitution making process. We'll have enough information, the public will be aware, we'll sensitize the masses, they'll know their rights and responsibilities in these processes. And now that things are not yet moving, it really plays, it will leave a negative impact, because I don't think there is any progress in terms of starting the civic education and public consultations already. So the citizens even don't understand what is happening. They don't understand what is the constitution making process all about. So when we do the constitution making, we start the constitution making, we're going to rush into elections within a very short period of time. When will they get the time to understand the voting rights? I recently happened to be part of the Iala elections, and it was crazy. Like, sincerely speaking, it was crazy.
And you are educated.
Yeah. And now we are here talking about a permanent constitution making process and elections where people don't know how they're supposed to vote, how they're supposed to tick the ballots, understanding the ballot papers and electoral processes. It's going to be messy. As long as we don't give it time, it's not going to
be a very easy one. I don't know how to describe it. And Jacqueline Nsiwa.
I think this process requires a lot of work, as Christine said. First of all, we need to educate people to understand what is the Constitution Making Act. And people need to know from this act, what does the public consultations look like? How are they going to contribute their views? Which are the key areas for them to make contribution, and where do they go when they want to make contribution? And this means that we have to prepare the people and prepare the ground, educate them about the current transitional constitution that we have, educate them about the peace agreement so that they know what is in the peace agreement, and educate them about the law itself, and then have dialogues with them to agree and reach consensus on the key issues that they would like to bring forward. Constitution making require people to be making either submissions orally or verbally, but this means you have to start preparing them on how they can engage in this process. The second issue is that we need to start mapping out key actors that we are going to be consulting with. That means we have to identify the academia, we have to identify the chiefs, we have to identify the youth groups, we have to identify the communities and the IDPs and all this for this process. And then planning for the resources. How do we reach there, and how do they reach the process and the mechanisms or the institutions of the constitution-making process? And this means that constitution-making has to be open up for civic space. If people want to talk about term limit, for example, it's their right to say it in the constitution of how they want the term limit to be defined. If women want to talk about how they are going to be married, they should be able to talk about it, and at what age they should be married, they should be allowed to talk about it regardless of the cultures, as IUN has said. And that means there's a lot of stake at hand for us to start talking about this. The issues of resource management becomes very important, and I think this is what we are struggling with. The management of the oil and non-oil revenue, all this comes to discussions in the constitution-making processes. And these are important stages that people need to be enlightened on, so that when the process comes, they can be able to make contributions to it.
Thank you, Jacqueline Nsiwa. Let me conclude with David Ayuel. Yes.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me. I just want to add what Jacqueline was saying, and in regards to the permanent constitution-making process, this should be something that the government should prioritize, and all the parties to the agreement, for a reason that we believe if we have it, it might put to an end the suffering of the people. The reason as to why I'm using the word might is that in as much we might have the law, people tend not to implement the law that exists, because even currently we have some good laws that they are not being implemented. And again, I want to use this opportunity to highlight a few things in regards to us as the youth. Like the National Election Bill has been drafted by the NCAC, and it was submitted today afternoon. If you've seen it
news,
it has been submitted to the Ministry of Justice, and members of the civil society, including youth, women, and civil society, we did not sign the bill. As I'm one of the people that sits in the NCC, the reason is clear that bill does not reflect the views of young people and the views of the members of the civil society in regards to Section 60, 61, 62, which currently in the bill, it is Section 60, 63 and 66 of the bill. In this, the youth had earlier on made submissions that as since the peace agreement highlights young people, the youth as the majority of 40%, We in the NCC we the youth coalition made a submission to the NCC that we're requesting for young people to be given 3% of representation within the parliament, and there should be reserved seats. And in these reserved seats, we made it to be a geographical location representation, in that 3 seats, because 3% is 7 of the seats, 3 will come from Barral Kazal, mm-hmm. 2 from Upper Nile region, and 2 from Central Equatorial region. These will be elected on the ballot papers immediately. Mm-hmm. So all these things were not reflected in the act, and we believe that this act is not moving as per what the peace agreement says. The reason why we are stakeholders to the peace agreement, and our views should have been put in place. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and I think we have been caught by time.
Yeah.
And I would say thank you very much for this very informative interaction. Even for us in the media, we need to do a lot of things in this process. And of course, a lot is on you, the civil society, because you can be objective, you can be impartial, you can be disinterested, but you have interest, but you are not acting there as having personal interest. And I think you need to come here again and again, and we continue together this engagement and this civic education in many, many different ways. Thank you very much, Jacqueline Nasiwa, the Director for Center for Inclusive Governance. Thank you very much, David Ayuel, Youth Representative in the National Constitution Amendment Committee. And last but not least, Christine Kiden, National Coordinator for the South Sudan Youth Organizations Coalition. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And that is the end of today's Nationwide Discussion Hour on Radio Mirai. Me, Kia Brishadar. Thanks for listening.